This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Looking to start a side hustle or become your own boss? Do it with Shopify. Whether you're selling succulents or stilettos, Shopify has the industry-leading tools to help you create, control, and grow your own business. So get serious about selling and get Shopify today. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.co.uk/special offer.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Monday, May 13th. I'm Zoe Thomas for the Wall Street Journal. Want to get the best answers out of an artificial intelligence chatbot? Try asking it to impersonate an expert or even a character from Star Trek. We'll explain the strategies researchers say can improve results when talking to AI. Plus, an education technology company that set out to revolutionize online learning at universities is fighting for its life. 2U is facing mounting debt and competition from some of its former clients. WSJ Higher Education reporter Melissa Korn joins us to talk about what went wrong and what it tells us about the future of digital learning. But starting with AI. More and more of us are using these new tools to answer questions in our work and personal lives. But getting the best answers out of an AI chatbot? Well, that requires asking the questions in the right way. WSJ contributor Bart Ziegler is here with some strategies that could help elicit better chatbot responses. So Bart, before we get into the how, I want to ask about the why. Why can't I, or maybe shouldn't I, ask an AI chatbot a question in the same way that I might query a search engine?
Well, chatbots are not that straightforward. They are trained on billions and billions of words of human-created documents, language, etc. And unlike Google searches, they want to have a little conversation with you. And it's been discovered that how you make that conversation can affect the interest and accuracy and usefulness of their results.
So let's talk about how you make that conversation and how to get those best responses. What changes when you ask these AI chatbots to pretend to be an expert?
Well, it seems they then put themselves in the persona of that expert. For example, if you ask it to act like Albert Einstein and then ask it a question about Einstein's theory of relativity, it will start answering as if it were Einstein. It seems you could tell it to pretend it's almost anybody. You could ask it to pretend it's a famous architect if you're designing your house, ask it to be a famous chef if you have some culinary questions. It seems like that type of role-playing is something deeply embedded in how these AI chatbots work, and it actually can produce better responses.
One of the things that struck me was this research that showed you could ask an AI chatbot to pretend to be a character from Star Trek and you'd get more accurate answers. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, that was among the odder findings that these researchers come up with. They can't explain it, but they used this specialized software called an automatic prompt creator, which asked the AI chatbot itself how to get better answers out of it. And it came up with this language to pretend you're in a Star Trek episode. You're plotting a course through turbulence, and you're approaching the source of some anomaly. And then if you ask a question that way, it answers you as if it's on board the Star Trek Enterprise. And that actually produced higher accuracy in answers to questions that were posed in that way. One of the researchers told me this is just another example of how these AI chatbots are black boxes to the researchers. They don't know what they're doing, and they're sometimes surprised themselves what types of rewording of questions can produce better answers.
What about emotional encouragement?
That's another interesting area that some researchers have looked into, that if you prompt the chatbot like you would a human to do better, to try again, questions like, is this your best response? They can produce more accurate results. The researchers were left thinking that it shows that these chatbots, though they're computer chips and software, have some sort of emotional intelligence or emotional sense, at least. Though, of course, they don't think. They're not people. They're computers. But they do seem to be somehow prompted to do better if you approach them as you would a human you were asking a question.
Humans often do well at answering complex questions when they slow down and take a systematic approach. Can chatbots benefit from the same strategy?
A study by Google found that if you tell a chatbot such things as take a deep breath and work on this problem step by step, or break this down, it actually will do better in answering math questions. It seems it's another example of how chatbots can be prompted to do better as a person would be.
That was WSJ contributor Bart Ziegler. Coming up, changes in online education have made it hard for one of the industry's big players to stay afloat. We'll tell you what's happening to EdTech company 2U after the break.
Hi, it's Leia, and I'm on Diesel's sustainability journey. I'm going for an all-out immersion into the world of Diesel denim, and you get to come with me. Come on. We're going to a laundry, a farm, a factory. I'm going to talk to customers. I'm going to do everything to really get under the skin of the brand. Discover more on Diesel.com.
The EdTech company 2U set out to revolutionize education by helping highly reputable universities establish online learning. At one point, the company was worth over $5 billion. But with shifting student interests and fierce competition, it's struggling to keep up. The company's value has plummeted to $30 million, and its balance sheet is crippled by $900 million in debt. WSJ higher education reporter Melissa Korn has been looking into the missteps 2U made. Melissa, what was unique about 2U's approach?
So the thing that 2U offered from the beginning was a kind of full comprehensive package. They referred to white glove concierge service. So they would handle generally the course construction, the course design, what the student would actually see when they're online. They would handle marketing. They would help funnel people to the admissions office. And they did not make admissions decisions. They did not handle faculty hiring. But they got the program up and running, and then they continued to operate it once it was running. And you would buy that whole package of services, and usually for about a 10-year contract. And the company would get about 60% of tuition revenue for that.
Enrollment in its program started to dip a few years ago. What was behind that?
The landscape had changed significantly in the past, I'd say, half dozen years compared with what it was the first decade of their existence. We saw more companies come out with similar services, oftentimes allowing schools to buy just a portion of the service, so just marketing or just course design. And they would then pay a lot less in order to get those services. And then the schools themselves, especially after the pandemic, realized they had the capacity to do a lot of this themselves. They didn't necessarily need an outside company to design their courses for them because they had faculty who had been doing that for 2 or 3 years now, at least. And faculty were more on board with experimenting.
2U hasn't posted an annual profit since its initial public offering in 2014. What is the company doing to try and recover from its current financial struggles?
2U has two main lines of business. They have these degree programs, and then they also have boot camps and executive education. And both have struggled in various ways over the past few years. Executive education is doing quite well right now. Coding boot camps are not. AI boot camps are. So you're seeing a lot of unevenness in the different segments of the business. They are continuing to partner with more and more schools. So there are still willing partners out there. They're offering a more flexible deal with those partners. So instead of that full comprehensive package, you can now buy a kind of white glove service light where you're just getting a portion of those services.
Melissa, at one point, as 2U was dealing with more competition and its financial struggles, it looked for a private equity buyer, right?
Yeah, it shopped itself around for a little while there, did not get any takers. And part of the reason for that was the company was paying a lot of money to attract students to its various programs, in part because there were so many of these programs out there. So to funnel prospective students to that particular school that was their partner school got more and more expensive. The rules around online advertising and marketing changed, and privacy rules also affected it. So that was getting so much more expensive that it was not a particularly attractive prospect for a private equity buyer at the time.
How do students say 2U's program stacks up against other university courses?
There are a lot of students who absolutely love their programs and say that they were life-changing. They wouldn't have been able to get a master's if they hadn't taken this, or they wouldn't have gone down a new career path without that boot camp. But there are some who say that it wasn't quite what they expected. There's a group of students that sued University of Southern California saying that their social work program in partnership with 2U was misleading. It wasn't all it was cracked up to be, that they were bullied into signing up for it and didn't know what they were getting. So there have been complaints that the admissions folks, that the marketing folks who are there to get students in the funnel, that they're too aggressive. And there's been instances of them calling and emailing. I had one person say it was aggressively persistent to get these people because they wanted them to enroll in these courses.
And how has 2U responded to that?
2U says that, again, they have a lot of students who are very, very happy with their services. They have a lot of schools that continue to want to work with them. So clearly they're doing something right. And they say that they're maligned unfairly just because they're a for-profit company in the higher ed space.
So where do things stand for 2U now? And what does this tell us about the future of online higher education?
So anyone who thought online ed was just something to be done during the pandemic is very wrong. What 2U is doing to right the ship itself is major cost cutting. They've had layoffs. They've shut down offices. They are trying to restructure the debt, and it's not quite clear how they're going to do that yet, but they've said that they have been making progress with lenders.
That was our higher education reporter, Melissa Korn. And that's it for Tech News Briefing. Today's show was produced by Julie Chang with supervising producer Catherine Millsop. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back this afternoon with TNB Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.